Good evening, everyone, and thank you for coming out tonight. Welcome to WILL's Community Cinema Screening and Discussion. I'm Henry Radcliffe, Community Engagement Producer at Illinois Public Media, WILL Radio, TV, and online. All across the country, people and communities, 100 of them, in fact, are coming together to watch and discuss tonight's film, Welcome to Shelbyville. Public television is known for our high-quality independent documentaries, and tonight we hope we'll continue to earn the reputation for bringing cinema out to the community to watch and enjoy, but also engage in meaningful discussion about local connections to the issues. And of course, we are grateful for our national partner, the Independent Television Service, who brings the community cinema series to all of us public television stations and provides us with quality independent documentaries to air every week on WILL television and the public broadcasting system. And also, we want to thank the Champaign Public Library for providing this wonderful facility for us to view the film in. We will show tonight's film with closed captioning, and on our discussion tonight, will be signed for the deaf by Rose Panapinto, the Office of Disabilities, Resources, and Educational Services has connected us to Rose. The discussion will be recorded by Mike Pritchard and moderated by Jack Brighton, and we'll start the film shortly.
We're going to have a conversation now. My name is Jack Brighton with WILL. And we often have a panel up here. We don't have a panel tonight, but we do have you. And although I guess, you know, the ending of that film was so uplifting and hopeful that I guess maybe the immigration problem, you know, isn't that complicated after all, huh? Everything solved in Shelbyville, Tennessee. Anyway, we have Henry back here with the microphone. So if any of you would have some comments about the film, any of your thoughts, would be great to hear, and we'd just kind of go from there conversationally. I'm going to not really speak my own opinions because I'm sort of representing a neutral point of view as part of WILL, but I would be very, very interested in whatever you have to say, and let's maybe talk about the film. Any thoughts?
Some of the thoughts that I had was there's actually an interfaith initiative here in town that some students belong to it, as well as, you know, other folks that are not part of the university community, and they're trying really hard to get folks involved. I think part of it's a PR problem. I teach at Parkland College, and we have a lot of international students who are there, but they kind of tend to stay in a group because the American students are not welcoming. So it sort of connects with this. And what my American students tend to say is something like, well, why don't they speak English? Well, they're actually learning how to speak English, and American students are not extending themselves to, it's kind of like some of the folks in Shelbyville. It's like those people, one of the remarks was like the hygiene remark. You know, it's always amazing to me how when you're the other, that you're dirty, that somehow filth is associated with, you know, that you're the other person. This happened for Italians and the Irish, you know, way back in the 1900s and 1800s as well. And I just found it amusing and bemusing because any of us could live in an apartment or a house. You know, you look at hoarders, for instance, and you know that Americans are just as nasty or can be just as nasty as foreigners. Some of the solutions that have been put forth by some of the folks who work with the international students are to try to create a space where the international students can congregate, but I've been very much against that because that only replicates the problem. And so if you kind of translate that over in our bigger community, Champaign-Urbana, you know, I think it's incumbent upon us to kind of reach out and speak to people and not make assumptions. I liked the elderly black woman who spoke. I can't remember her name. And it always seems that the people of color kind of band together when they're being talked about. But she also made the good point that, you know, we have to look at our actions and we have to make changes. Of course, we have to figure out how we're going to do that. We can't wait for people to just come to us. So I suggest that folks, you know, go to different places of different faith traditions. A lot of times you don't have to belong or to talk to people and find out, you know, what some of their cultural beliefs or values are. It could be as simple as saying hello to somebody on the bus and just start talking to them, or look online, the internet. We didn't have the internet when I was, you know, a kid, which was a long time ago, but you can go on the internet and find out about different faith traditions, different cultural values, and yet Americans, we seem stuck. You know, it's like somebody has to come to us, and that's not how our country started out at all. So anyway, I'll shut up because my friend's looking at
Great.
Me and hammering.
Thanks.
And thanks for putting this on. I'm using the class.
Nice. Well, we have a lot of people from all over the world in this community. We have refugees from a lot of places. We showed a film here, what, 2 months ago about, you know, a woman from the Congo who brought her family as a refugee living in Arizona. And, you know, there's a war going on in the Congo that most Americans probably don't know much about. But there are people from the Congo in the audience, you know. I didn't know there's like 250 Congolese refugees living in Champaign-Urbana. I mean, who knew, you know? And how do we connect with those people? So I'm glad to hear about what you're doing out at Parkland College. That's great.
One of the other things that I constantly hear from American students in my classes is this perception that somehow jobs are being taken away. So, for instance, I always talk to them about a chicken factory. I used to work in a different type of factory. And I ask them, would you want to work in a chicken factory? And when I explain the process step by step, nobody wants to do it. But some of them are very much rooted in this idea of, but they're still taking our jobs. And it's like, well, if you want to go and work in a chicken factory or name a factory, that's fine. But don't say that they are taking our jobs. What jobs are being taken? Tell me specifically. And they can't name what jobs are being taken. Even here in this area, a lot of the chicken factories are actually like in South Carolina, North Carolina, places like that. So anyway, I'm done. Somebody else needs to talk.
Thank you. Somebody else gets to talk. How are we doing in Champaign-Urbana? You know, we like Shelbyville.
Hi, I was born and raised in Fort Wayne, Indiana, so I'm a Hoosier.
So all right.
I'm from a different state.
Welcome.
Thank you. So I'm a Hoosier refugee. Anyway, I wanted to say that, you know, my parents, my grandparents were from Mexico, and they came here to the United States. And my parents are first-generation Americans, and I'm second-generation American, and attended a Church of the Brethren college in North Manchester, Indiana. And one of the things that I learned there at Manchester was the appreciation for other religions. We had to take religious courses, but I'm born and raised Catholic, cradle Catholic is what we call ourselves, and my education has always been pro-college and Catholicism, but attending a Church of the Brethren college was a very different experience for me, and it was something that enlightened me to so many other different religions. I'm a little nervous. Sorry about that. And I just wanted to say that it's been a journey for me being born and raised in a family of Mexicans where education was extremely important. And having the wherewithal to get a very good education and end up here working for universities. I've worked in Arizona State University, University of Arizona. I worked for the Arizona Board of Regents, Eastern Illinois University, and now I'm working here at the University of Illinois. So I have just had a wonderful life because of my education, and my parents have always taught us to be welcoming with religions, education, different cultures. And I find myself attending films like this with my friends from Sri Lanka and
fantastic
and Mars or Venus, and I just really appreciate the cultural setting that Champaign-Urbana has provided, and I really enjoy living here. In fact, so much so that I would like to retire here. And I lived in Indiana. I've lived in Payne, Ohio, small town like Shelbyville. Very welcoming with the different cultures, and also lived in Arizona. Not so welcoming to Mexicans. So that was a different experience. And then I came back here because I was missing the friendliness, the community, the unity that they, you know, portray in Shelbyville. So I just wanted to say thank you. I really appreciated this movie.
Well, thank you. And I have a question for you, if you don't mind. You lived in Arizona, and of course Arizona has gone through, you know, this thing with the law passed in the state requiring, you know, to prove your citizenship if
exactly.
called upon to do so by law enforcement. Is the situation in Arizona is it different from what they were describing in Shelbyville? Is it a different kind of conflict, or what do people think? I mean, I guess I'm asking what, you know, to contrast this with the film.
In Arizona, I lived there from 1986 until 92, and while I was there, having been born and raised in the Midwest and not being exposed to a lot of people from my culture and then moving to an environment where we were dominant, the dominant culture, but we're not in positions of power or control, so it was very different, and even now, as our population grows, the Mexican population grows, there is that animosity between the American-born Mexicans and the Mexicans coming from across the border. But I notice that at times they would band together, we would band together, because a lot of Mormons were coming into the state of Arizona and pushing back against, you know, the unity of the Mexican culture. And so that seems to be a big problem with the economic downturn and whatnot going on. I really, you know, I've been away from it for so long now that I can't really comment
okay,
on that.
Fair
but
enough.
I know that my parents have experienced some of the backlash with this new law. My parents own a small ranch, and people were just coming willy-nilly, you know, with their F-350 Ford trucks coming and wanting to buy the land and, you know, wanting to speak to the owner. And my dad, you know, in his dungarees and his torn shirts and whatnot, working on the fence, you know, is like, you're speaking to him. I've had this ranch for a number of years, and, you know, get off my land. There's no for sale sign here, and I don't understand why you think that you can come and just take this, you know, from me. So it's not like Shelbyville there in Arizona. So.
Okay. Interesting. Henry, I think another person here wants to talk.
I was wondering, what was the basis for the animosity between the newly coming in immigrants and the second generation, first generation?
A lot of it was the misunderstanding of the culture, being embarrassed by the educated American Mexican Americans being educated and viewing the actions towards the Mexicans coming from across the border and their behavior. The Mexicans coming from across the border, a lot of them were going to, like, Sam's Club and buying in bulk and whatnot, and just not treating it like they were still in Mexico, where, you know, the trash is just everywhere, and it was just
they were embarrassing
them, and so it's and then also, like, when we
like
would
my
go
kids.
Out in the evening,
no, okay.
when we would go out in the evening, it was very clear when. Like a bar would have Mexican music, Latin music, or whatever, and you had educated and non-educated Mexicans going to these bars, and then you had a piano-playing bar and Caucasian Americans going to that piano bar, you saw a lot of police escorts and the wanding of from head to toe with the Mexican bars where the Latin music was being played, and yet you didn't have any of that. Where the piano bars were being played. So there was a lot of, you know, there was a lot of angst about, I don't want to be associated with the non-educated or, you know, the people that are just recently here, because.
So it seems like there are waves of this happening. You know, in the case of Shelbyville, it was, you know, the Latinos and then the Somalis, and I guess people from Burma were next. And, you know, after that, what, Canadians? I mean, you know.
I worked my last job that I had. My boss was, his first language was Spanish. And he was absolutely livid about the fact that they were putting up Spanish signs in the stores. And his position was that if my people don't learn the language, they'll be washing dishes forever. Mm-hmm. And this lends itself to letting them, you know, not learn the language. That was really very, very important for them to learn the language. I don't think we've quite gotten that across to the immigrants, that the language is really, that's really the what tells if you're an American or not. I can't remember the name of the book, but this guy wrote this book that said, you know, you can dress up in any way you want, but as soon as you open your mouth, mm-hmm. they know you're an American.
Yeah.
And that's really what defines you. In fact, to me, the magic of being an American is that no matter who you see, where you see them, he might be an American or he might be somebody else. You don't know who's an American. I was in Kenya, and I asked my driver, who was taking us around, Benson, you, an American, are standing at the edge of Ngorongoro. He's been through the slavery, but now he's gotten himself educated, and he's here back to see his country. Your people have always been free. Who is the luckier of the two? And you don't have to tell me right now. You can tell me on the last day when we leave. On the last day, I said to him, Benson, what's the answer to my question? And this was in the morning, and we were going to be with them till about noon. And he hemmed, and he hawed, and he couldn't decide who was the luckier. Finally, he said to me, you tell me what the answer is. And I said to him, well, there really isn't any answer. It's how you answer the question that just blew him away.
That's interesting.
The interpretation, yeah.
You know, the language issue is interesting because, well, today, coincidentally, I got a new camera and it has instructions in English and Espanol. You know, which is great. I can actually, you know, I speak a little Spanish, and I'll probably stick to the English version because I'm trying to figure out this camera. But, you know, a few years ago, and maybe, I don't know how recently, maybe this debate is still ongoing about the English-only movement. I remember the English-only movement where it was, yeah, I mean, I hear what you're saying. On the other hand, you know, just to be somewhat argumentative, Americans probably, as a sort of statistical matter, fewer Americans know other languages than, you know, probably any other country around the world. And maybe, you know, maybe many Americans, speculating a little bit, take pride in that we don't have to learn any other language. Is that a good thing?
The reason for that is that there is a universal language. There is a world language. It's called English. But more than that, there's something magic about English. There are only 5 countries that you can go to where essentially nobody will hassle you. You know what these 5 countries are? Canada, United States, New Zealand, Australia, and Great Britain. They all speak English.
Although when I was in Great Britain, I couldn't understand a thing they were saying.
That's a different problem.
Right.
So, you know, there's something magical about the stories we hear as kids or whatever we learn. There's something that goes with English that's, I don't know what it is.
Well, and that was a part of the story, too, is that these immigrants from Somalia, you know, the English class was a central piece in the film. I thought that was very interesting.
Yeah, and it should be really, really emphasized much stronger.
Yeah, another thought back here.
with the English only. Mm. And that was a problem between the Mexicans coming over and the Mexican-Americans, was the language barrier. And we didn't appreciate that they were there was the expectation that everybody should learn Spanish, or that the English should be changed to Spanish so that, you know, they can understand and assimilate faster. That's not assimilation as far as we were concerned. Assimilation is learning to speak the English language. And I agree, like in the film, where the Somalians had gotten together and given them a list of things that they should know about the Somalians, and then in turn the person from Shelbyville said, you know, how about giving them a list of things that they should know about, you know, living here in the United States. Mm-hmm. I totally agree with that.
Part of the difficulty, though, with the English-only approach, and I think Utah is actually the only, I think they passed the law in the last year, maybe the last 6 months.
Okay.
They're the only state that actually has it on the books that English is the official language. The part of the difficulty for immigrants coming here is that if they're not literate in their own native tongue, then you're asking them to build, learn English, and they're still struggling to become literate in their own native language, if that makes sense. It's like if somebody were from Bangladesh and they're not literate in Bengali, then you're asking them to come and understand a new structure when what would be much more helpful for them is to learn their own, become literate in their own language as well as ESL. And there are a lot of immigrants here that actually take ESL classes at Parkland and other community colleges throughout the state in order to get a better understanding. A lot of times they're actually very ashamed of speaking English when, in fact, if they've gone to the high school, they've gone through like primary and secondary school and maybe even some college, a lot of them have a British educational background or a French educational background because they've been colonies at one time. They have a better sense of grammar than my American students a lot of time. I can tell them, okay, well, this is an adjectival adverb. They understand that. How many of you all know what that creature is?
A what?
An adjectival adverb. One.
Oh.
Okay. They know how to diagram sentences. That's not necessarily taught in schools anymore. So where the American students understand it. So that's a big problem. A lot of them are trying to learn English. I'm an advocate for a both-and approach. Why does it have to be an either-or approach, either you learn English or not? And actually, I'm trying to remember where I saw it. I think it was Thursday or Friday. I don't know if it was New York Times or Salon, but one of those places published that this idea that English is the magical language is quickly becoming a myth, that Americans, in fact, are very arrogant and ignorant of other languages, and people are starting to learn other languages. Spanish is one of them, Chinese, Arabic. So I question this idea that we have to have English only when we're the ones that actually are illiterate. And the other thing is if you're working in a factory, you're going to need, and any kind of job that involves mechanics, machines, you're going to need, for safety's sake, for those persons to be able to understand in their native language, especially if they're just getting here. They've got to become acclimated. Give them a list, fine, that's great. You know, we used to have welcome wagons back in, the 30s, 40s, 50s. I think it stopped probably about the 70s. That's a great idea, but it's got to be more than that. The immigrants, also the Constitution. If you knew what the Constitution test looked like for immigrants trying to become citizens, you would be stunned. And I'd be willing to bet you everyone in here, including me, could not pass that test. Somebody has written up a little book. I remember before Pages went out of business, they had it on a display. You can probably find it at Borders about what the Constitution test looks like. If you can find that book in Borders or online, look at it. I don't remember a lot of that stuff. I remember a lot of basic stuff. But some of it's pretty complicated. So they do learn English in order to assimilate, I guess, to a certain extent. And it takes a lot for them to get to this country as well. So,
well, thank you. You know, I don't have a strong opinion one way or the other. I think part of the debate is like the official, like state provided kinds of, you know, forms and applications and documentation, things like that. that it does, you know, certainly create a complexity if you were to provide multiple versions of that in different languages. But, you know, the other side of that is, I think, you know, what a couple people have alluded to is, I was, well, I guess in a coffee shop, and a man came up and was asking me a question in French, and I didn't know French, so, you know, I said, hablas español, and suddenly, you know, he spoke Spanish, too. He's from Paris. He speaks, you know, French, German, Espanol. So we were able to communicate through a language which was native to neither of us, which was just a good thing, I think. It was a very nice experience, and it just taught me that, you know, the value of learning languages, I suppose, you know.
I think that the United States is on the right track with the citizenship and the test taking and whatnot. While I was in Australia in December of 2005, I noticed that they were dealing with an immigration issue and the language barrier, and they were, I can't remember which, how many different languages they were having to translate a lot of their documents, their forms into, but they were looking to the United States to say, hey, you know, maybe we should, they might have something here with this, you know, with the TOEFL and with the test taking and whatnot. And so I think, you know, that we are on the right track as far as the test taking and the citizenship test taking. But I noticed that other countries are looking in our direction for some kind of education, I guess, if you will. So I think that's a good
thing. I was just going to say that although English is the universal language, I think it's very beneficial. Some of the most intelligent people are fluent in many languages besides English. And now for graduation requirements, I don't know how long this has been in effect, but you need to have at least 4 years of a foreign language to graduate, and some colleges won't accept you if you don't even have 2 years of a foreign language. And I just think, like, Chinese, Swahili, and Spanish are the most rising languages in the world today, and I just think it can only benefit one to know other languages and to be kind of welcoming of other countries and other cultures through the languages.
Great.
Where Canada has kind of an ideal system where if you want to learn your mother tongue, they will provide you a tutor. No matter what it takes, they'll find somebody to teach you your mother tongue. But English is still the main language. And, I think that's a good thing. I myself speak a number of languages fluently, one of them English. Hindi, Punjabi, Urdu, I've had French and German in college, and Russian. But it's still English.
No, I forget, you told, you said where you were from, and I forgive me for not remembering. I'm thinking about India, where you have, how many languages in India alone?
Thousands.
Yes. Active? Is that?
There are more than 3,000 languages that are spoken. There are 16 main languages that have been assigned to each of the states. But most of the commerce is in English.
Yes.
Because the people in South India, they're not interested in learning Hindi. They want to learn their own language. And so English is the medium of, and it was the medium of instruction when I went to school.
Other thoughts?
I would just like to say that it kind of almost saddens me that English is so, like, not forced upon people to know, but it's just really heavily stressed. I feel like, I mean, people born in America, raised here, generations raised here, you can trace your roots back. I know I have Irish and all that in me, but I don't know any of that culture, and I think it's just really important and that people might lose some of their culture because they have to learn this new language and kind of assimilate themselves here I would be so grateful if I knew other languages or had some of that culture. I just feel a lot of Americans just don't really think about that side of it, is that you can own so many other cultures while still speaking English. So I just want to say I'd be happy to be fluent in another language. So
great. One of the other defining themes of the film to me was fear of change. That this is something that, and it's universal, and this is not, you know, anything that only one group of people experiences, but it seems that, you know, this was a common statement among the people interviewed, especially the first part of the film. You know, we like our community the way it is, and now it's changing. It's different than it was 10 years ago, you know, and that's unsettling to people. Perhaps, you know, especially if you're comfortable with the way things are, but maybe not if you're, you know, new to a place or you're not comfortable with the way things are. That's probably just a universal theme, and I'm just making that observation. The other thing, and I'll stop with this, if you all have any thoughts, that's great on this either of these points. But the other one is that, you know, learning about other cultures, how do we do that? I mean, it seems, you know, we've talked about language and getting to know different groups of people or, you know, having some kind of connection or communication. But it seems that stories are really central to that. So once you know somebody's story, that is a sort of an entrance point to understanding them as another human being. That's been my experience anyway, as opposed to learning about their culture or learning their language. If you learn their story, you see them a different way. Ernie, do you have a thought?
This is where being a music teacher, music as a second language, it's the universal language. And so part of any appreciation of other people comes from admiring their work as artists, as musicians. And what would we do without rhythms from Africa? And, you know, each of the cultures, I think the best way is to have an appreciation for other cultures is to actually experience them and actively seek the things that you admire and let those people know that that's important. That's why the Thousand Villages concept and things like that seem to really resonate. I might also mention that Jim Rogers, who is a guy that traveled around the world in his Mercedes with a little cart around it, he is a well-known financial expert, is teaching his children Chinese. He said, you've got to learn how to speak Chinese, because guess what? That's what's coming up.
Back in the 70s and 80s, I was part of a group that sponsored Vietnamese families, allowed them to help them immigrate to Champaign-Urbana. And our first families, mainly everyone wants to, most immigrants want to come because they want a better life. And in order to have a better life, you get in an entry-level job, and then you need to move up the ladder a little bit, and that makes your life a little easier. And our first immigrants really were much more successful. And suddenly we realized that as there were more and more Vietnamese immigrants, instead of watching American television and learning English via that, they had developed, there were enough of them in the community that they developed a source of rentals for videos in Vietnamese. And I can understand that you long to hear your language that you had heard all your life. But those people then weren't doing as well as the original immigrants when there were fewer in town. And the English language was of benefit to them to do better in their workforce, I think. Not saying that they should drop their other culture.
Right. Other thoughts, folks? Well, people from other planets are learning our languages by listening to our television stream that's beaming out from Earth into outer space. And when they get here, believe me, there will be major change. So I think we'll leave it at that for now. Thank you all for coming, and we hope to keep this going. It's really fun, so I appreciate you coming out and hope you...
The next one will be Two Spirits, and we'll be showing at the Art Theater on Saturday, June 11th at 3 p.m. in the afternoon.
Oh, very different.
There is a postcard that has information about that film on the table. And before you leave, could you fill out the questionnaires? Thank you so much for coming, and please have a good evening.